And thanks for joining us on KVCR for KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming.
My heart is crying, crying.
On this edition of the program, it's Music in Conversation with Bobby Brooks Wilson. Bobby was already in tribute bands performing, among other things, the music of Jackie Wilson, long before finding out that he was indeed Jackie Wilson's son.
Just say you will, say you will.
We'll get to the music a bit later. It all started, in a way, because he was stranded in Hawaii, awaiting a medical discharge from the Navy, drastically changing his plans to stay in until retirement.
Once I got the medical discharge, I found myself sitting in Waikiki wondering what I was going to do the rest of my life, waiting on my medical discharge. And I was hanging out with the Samoans because when I joined the Navy, I was 140 pounds, soaking wet. When I got out, I was 240. So the locals thought I was Samoan.
Right, exactly. I'm picturing you. That's why I'm laughing here. So.
Yeah. So I went and hang out with them, and I had no idea these guys. When they invited me to the karaoke bar, they were inviting me to a place where people sing, because I thought it was, to be honest, I thought it was a Japanese soup bar. And they kept saying, we're going to karaoke, we're going to karaoke. So to me, I was like, what, we're going to a Japanese restaurant? You know, so. And I learned very quickly, they went to sing and do what they call eat poo-poos, which is appetizers, chicken wings and whatever.
Okay, okay.
And drink.
That's the courage to get up to the karaoke.
The thing about it, in those days, they didn't have stages. So you actually sang at your table.
Ah.
So if you go with 10 or 12 guys, they have the TVs in the walls, and that was before flat-screen TVs. But in Hawaii, they had the TVs already flush against all the walls, and the screens were pretty big. They were 60-inch plus. And you read the words from your table and just sing the song. So you didn't have to have a lot of courage. So after a few drinks, you know, of Coke,
sure,
then
sure.
I got my nerve up to sing a song. And that's when this guy, Peter Hernandez Sr., walked up to me, offered me a job in show business.
He was leading a doo-wop group. I forget the name of it right now.
The Love Notes.
That's it. So I guess.
And they were performing in the Waikiki Sheraton. Two shows a day, 7 nights a week.
Mm. And so at this point, can we talk about who Peter and his son are, or maybe who he became, that is?
Well, Peter had a group called the Love Notes, and there's 7 guys and 7 young ladies, and we were doing all the music of the 50s and 60s. We actually called Peter the Dr. Doo-Wop, because
cool.
There was nothing about doo-wop music he did not know. There was no group he had never heard of. So anyway, working for him, I got my chops. They had a little boy on there named Bruno, who was playing Baby Elvis in the show. He had also his brother, who was playing drums. His name was Eric. And then his sister, Leilani, who was one of the singers. It was a family show plus other members. That's where I got the bug, man. Once I got on the stage and they had me there every night for an hour, hour and a half, I fell in love with it. I knew that's what I wanted to do. All beforehand, I had no idea. Of course, the kid turns out to be Bruno Mars, the pop star.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked with him till he was 19 years old. And Bruno got signed with Motown in L.A. when he went to move to L.A. at 17 to be with his sister. He got signed with Motown. But after 9 months, they dropped him.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's kind of stuck in a circle of pain for about 5 years, where he was working every dive bar you can think of in L.A., not really making any money, not getting ahead. But at one time, he kind of reached out to me and other people in his family and said, hey, I think I'm going to go back to Hawaii and give up on this music thing. And I said, Bruno, you're 22 years old. Call me when you're 30. I never forget that conversation.
Yeah.
They call me when you're 30. If you haven't figured it out by 30, I said, then we'll come up with a plan. I said, but you're in L.A., work L.A. And he did.
Yep. So at this point, you still didn't know who your father was at this point?
Well, by the time Bruno came to prominence, I did. But it was over time because I was working with the Love Notes, and a show opened up in Waikiki called the Legends in Concert show, an impersonation show.
Okay.
Paul Revere and the Raiders was the owner, along with a guy named John Stewart, the producer.
Okay.
So they came over to our show, because we were right next door to the Royal Hawaiian Shopping Center, where their theater was. And they came over on our show and wanted to see Bruno. Well, when they saw Bruno, they saw me. And that's when Paul Revere walked up to me and said, hey, man, you know who you look like? You know who you sound like? Blah, 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 blah. It was going on and on and on. It's kind of interesting.
Didn't you tell him? I read that your response was that you were a performer, not an impersonator. So he actually turned it down at first.
I turned it down 3 times. Now, growing up, my mom told me if it comes in threes, God is talking to you.
There you go.
So when he asked me the 3rd time, I gave up and said, okay, I come and see your show. Because he asked me, hey, come and be Jackie Wilson. I was like, nope, I'm an artist. And then the second time I ran into him and his wife, Sydney. And he said, what happened? I told you to come to the show. And I said, oh, you know, I'm an artist. I don't do impersonation. He went hogwash. And then the third time, when I ran into him the third time, I paid attention. So I went to the show, fell in love with it. At that time, I didn't know who Paul Revere was.
Oh, really?
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Oh, gosh.
I had no idea who he was.
He's just some guy in a bar for you. Okay.
Yeah. As far as I was concerned, you know, just another suit trying to talk me into a job that I didn't want to do. Well, Paul turns out to be a father figure to me. I wind up working for him with the Legends in Concert show, and not only working for the show, but working for him, where I was getting constant advice from Paul and direction. And so the family reached out to me about a year after I was with Legends. Somebody in Detroit heard that they had a Jackie Wilson playing in Hawaii, and they called the home office in Vegas and said, we want to meet him and approve him, because if he's no good, we don't want him doing our dad. That was the beginning.
Wow.
That was the beginning.
My first thing that I wrote down when I knew that I'd be speaking with you, it was a little bit snarky, but it was, how did you discover that Jackie was your father? Did you just finally see a picture of him? So what I'm going to do is amend that question to, you had to have been told before the Wilson family reached out and got a hold of you, you had to have been told over and over, beyond Paul Revere, that you looked like Jackie Wilson, that you sounded like this guy Jackie Wilson. And my gosh, with all your karaoke, I'd be surprised if you hadn't done Higher and Higher.
You know, here's the funny thing. You got to remember, I was still 240 pounds.
Oh, okay,
and,
okay. Your hair is not swooped that
I
way, didn't, too.
I used to shave my head.
Okay, okay.
And I used to wear a pencil-thin mustache, so Pete said I used to look like a killer. But Pete said, listen, I need to change your whole demeanor. I said, what do you mean? You need to lose weight. You need to grow hair. Can you do a pompadour? And I'm like, what's a pompadour? You know? He's like, see Bruno's hair? I said, yeah, that's what it's got to be. I said, man, I don't know if I can grow hair. You know, I've been shaving my head since the day I joined the Navy. Mm. So he goes, well, let's let it grow and see what happens, and we'll show you how to do it. That's what they did. At the same time, he says, you got to lose weight, because I couldn't fit into the suits. My arms were too big. It wouldn't close around my belly because, you know, I picked up a little bit of weight. So he finally found some big coats to put on me to cover me. And Peter could tell me to turn sideways because all the other guys were skinny Filipino-looking guys.
Okay.
They weren't Filipino, but they were skinny-looking Filipinos.
Sure.
you know?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And so I was the ugliest guy on the group, you know. And some of them let me know, to be honest. So later on, as I start evolving and becoming an entertainer, let me go back. I was very comfortable just being a background singer. And nothing else.
Okay.
I didn't want to be a front guy. I didn't want to sing lead. I was just happy as a lark singing the harmony parts, second tenor, first tenor, and false.
Mm-hmm.
Happy as a lark. But then as I started to grow, I said, wait a minute, I can sing in the Still of the Night. Hold on, I can sing the Skyliners song. You know, so as I started growing, that's when Peter said, hey, we got the Jackie Wilson medley. We want you to do it instead of the guy that had been doing it for years, Mike Baker. And I started seeing the dynamics of the group. Now I'm getting kind of deep. But,
cool.
You know, he wasn't very happy that they gave me his lead, which was Lonely Teardrops High and Higher medley.
Okay, yeah.
Well, the first time I did it, Pete said, just do your own thing. I didn't know nothing about Jackie Wilson. I'd never seen him. So as far as I was concerned, Mike Baker looked like Jackie Wilson. Because, you know, I figured, you know, he's been doing it so long, he probably looked like the guy. I wouldn't know what he looked like.
It's your only point of reference.
First time and there was no YouTube, there was no internet, you know, none of that stuff. And so I never forget, I jump up and do the first medley of Jackie Wilson's Higher and Higher and Lonely Teardrops. I put my own spin to it, and people went berserk. We got a reaction from me that we never got ever from anybody else. And Peter was like, wow, that's strange. So the next couple of shows, the same reaction. People just going crazy and jumping around like I'm Michael Jackson. And then I continued it until Paul offered me the job. And then I took it really serious then and got myself a vocal coach. And she was an opera teacher. She was an opera singer. And her name was Rhonda, Queen of the South Pacific. She had 35 gold albums in New Zealand.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was an opera singer. And she took me on by recommendation of another lady named Nancy Brunel, who was the Screen Actors Guild president in Hawaii. She gave me this lady's name. She said, she don't take everybody, but try her. I said, yeah, because I got to learn how to sing like this guy. But when I took the classes with her, she said, you already got his voice and his range. You have a different color, but you have the exact same voice and range. which I thought was crazy. She says, I just have to teach you how to sing like him. And she did. Now, fast forward, I get to, Paul talks me into it, people in the audience start saying, hey, you look like Jackie, you sound like Jackie. A friend of mine found a picture of Jackie Wilson at the library, put it in a frame and gave it to me. She says, wow, this looks like you. And I freaked out on that one.
Yeah.
Then Peter from Love Notes, he showed me a couple albums of Jackie Wilson with Billy Ward's Dominoes. Mm. It looked like me in the pictures. And the expression on his face, I felt like I could read what he was thinking. Mm. He looked so much like me. I was like, can this guy hurry up with his picture? That's what I got from the expression on his face. You know, so, I mean, that's how much it really hit me. Now, fast forward, I meet some of the Wilsons, and we have a little bit of a talk about who's my background and who's my parents, and that's when I first told them, oh, I grew up in a foster home, but they really wasn't concerned. They just wanted to make sure that I did a good tribute to the dad. So they were very happy when they first met me back in 1994 in Vegas. Then they go back, that set of Wilsons go back to Detroit, but they never really reach out to me anymore. Then I go to Atlantic City. Paul Revere said, hey, Bob, I'm going to send you to Atlantic City. That's where Jackie Wilson was the king of New York, the East Coast.
Cool.
He was king. So I'm sending you over there. So, okay, cool. I get there. 2-3 weeks into Bally's, I get approached by the entertainment director for Bally's saying that the Four Tops want to meet me.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay. I was thrilled to death. I'd never met the Four Tops.
Yeah, yeah. Not even one of them.
Yeah, so he takes me upstairs to the green room, and the first thing Lawrence Payton says to me is, you got to be family. Are you being Bobby right now, or are you being Jackie?
Hmm.
Now, I'm like a few seconds. I'm standing in front of him. I said, sir, I'm being Bobby. I don't know what Jackie would be like. And they start laughing. And then Levi turns to me and says, you sure do. You got to get up early in the morning to be like my cousin. You got to get up early in the morning. And then I looked at Levi, and I said, Levi, I think I sound more like you than Jackie Wilson. And he looked at me and went, and walked away. And everybody laughed and said, he's a gruff. He's always, don't worry about it. He loves you. I didn't. And from then on, I created a bond with Lawrence and Duke and Obie. And then they reached out to a guy named Billy Roquel Davis that went by the pen name T. Carlo. And that was their cousin and my dad's cousin. Billy co-wrote, along with Berry Gordy, To Be Loved, Lonely Teardrops, I'll Be Satisfied, That's Why I Love You So.
Mm.
All those first 15 hits that Jackie had with Brunswick.
Yeah.
Billy, Gwen Gordy, and Berry Gordy. Now, of course, Berry Gordy was involved because Billy was dating Gwen Gordy. He was living with her. And the way the story goes, Billy was working for Brunswick in charge of all the writers. And Gwen said, my brother needs a job. Can you help him out? He's a songwriter. And Billy said, sure, your brother. Took him in. First song they worked on was Lonely Teardrops, and then along with that was To Be Loved, which were Berry's songs. The first song that Billy made them work on was Reap a Tea, which was Billy's song.
Okay.
Before Reap a Tea, it was called So Fine. Billy became my mentor, my father. He became my bridge with the Jackie Wilson family. And then once I met some of the siblings, we did the blood work, and then I found out that he was my dad.
Wow.
But that whole thing took about 7 to 8 years. It didn't happen overnight. And once I was confirmed, it took me a little while to accept it because I was like, well, what does it mean? Well, I found out what it really meant to me was I got to work harder. Because then everybody's looking at me saying, is he really Jackie's son? Can he sing? Can he dance? And the truth of it, most of the stars that I've met, the children don't sing or dance or act. So I could see why people were like, you know, giving me the second look.
Most certainly.
But I guess I have it naturally. Dionne Warwick said, man, if Jackie knew you was around, he would have knocked down doors. You know, that's my thing now. I'm carrying the torch for my dad as well as for myself. God has blessed me where I can stand on his shoulders and release my own music, you know, with Plateau Music. My producer over there is Tony Manta. And for the last 6-7 years, he and I have been a tour de force, making sure the music get out there and keeping our father's name going.
I'm David Fleming. Find many past KVC Arts programs via podcast through iTunes, NPR One, Spotify, and Google Play. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts.
Your love is lifting me higher than I ever.
Let's go back now to my conversation with Bobby Brooks Wilson. Earlier, we heard the stories of him leading up to finding out he was the son of Jackie Wilson, as well as his own musical career. And now the stories continue, and we'll get to the music as well.
I have to say that with this CD, It's About Time, it is really incredible, and it keeps alive the music of your father. You cover plenty of your father's music in there, but there's some originals in there as well. Your website, BobbyBrooksWilson.com. We were speaking of Higher and Higher just a bit ago, and there's a YouTube clip right there when you go to your page of you doing Higher and Higher. And talk about if someone questioned, you know, you can see your dance, your energy, you're moving to it, you're peeling off the jacket and letting the audience go, this is a clip that people need to go see if there's any question about this. And that also leads me to something else before we go to your CD, It's About Time. With you looking so much like your dad, with your hair currently the way it is, and you're performing cruise ships or oldie shows or whatnot, I would love to hear some of these times. I know they've got to be happening when performers from Jackie's era were just staring dumbstruck and just want to touch you and see if it's really your dad, you know?
I picked up so many family, I call them family members now, since I got in the oldie circuit. Charlie Thomas of the Drifters, I call
him
Uncle
love him.
Charlie now.
Yeah.
He told me I'm more like Jackie than Jackie. J.T. Carter of the Crest.
Yep.
The founder of the Crest. JT said when he was talking to me, he had to keep shaking himself that I was not Jackie.
Ooh.
Always said the same thing. But JT, he's saying, wait a minute, you got his spirit. He says, your aura is his. He says, it's like, last time I talked to Jackie, it feels like I'm talking to Jackie again.
Mm.
I get that a lot from all the people that worked with him. And Shirley Austin Reed, she said, oh my God, Jackie stands before me.
Wow.
And it gives me goosebumps. It makes me very thankful. And it's a confirmation almost every time I'm in front of somebody, they see or feel or hear my dad.
Beautiful.
So there's nothing I can do but carry it and just be it. Like I said at one time, I kind of was running away from it, but nothing was happening for me when I ran away from it. When I embraced it, the whole world opened. So there you go.
Yeah. You know, the folks that you just mentioned, I've interviewed Charlie Thomas, JT, and Shirley, so I can picture them saying this to you, and that's really nice.
Frankie Avalon, he grabbed my arm and said, don't go nowhere. And I went, okay. I said, it's an honor to meet you. He goes, no, you don't go nowhere. And the other people were pulling on him, and then he turned around and he started telling me these stories. And I'm like, my dad did a lot of good for a lot of people.
Wow.
And it's just stories that you never heard. BJ Thomas. We have the same agent that booked us.
Okay.
That booked me on cruise ships. So she called me and said, hey, Bobby, BJ Thomas is playing in Vegas. Go see him. I said, oh, okay. So I go to the show and she sends him a message. One of my talents is going to be this. And when he found out I was Jackie's son, he stopped in the middle of the show and started singing To Be Loved a cappella. To be loved, to be loved. Oh, what a feeling to be loved. And then he said, Jackie Wilson embraced me. They just wrote my first hit song. It put me on a tour with all black acts. He says, get this, I'm on a bus, a school bus with all black acts. And I walk on there and looked at all these guys, and it was complete silence. And he said, Jackie Wilson didn't know who I was from Man on the Hook. And he walked up and said, this is my brother. You F with him, you got to F with me. And he said... And that was the end of that. He says, everybody respected Jackie so much. That was the end of that. Oh, he's a brother. Okay, he's a brother. And he says, so I'm a brother. So I guess my dad just broke that trance there was to see a white act walk up on the bus and do the same tour that they were doing.
Yeah.
Buddy Holly was on that tour and other white acts were on that tour. But it was kind of funny the way BJ Thomas told the story.
And thank you for telling me that. Let's look at It's About Time. When did this come out?
2012. When we first started this project, it wasn't about going to radio. It was about having a product to sell in my shows because I didn't have any products.
Gotcha, okay.
And go back a little bit further, I did a show at Michael Feinstein's at Park Avenue in New York. One of the guests that sat in the audience was Paul Schaefer. He walked up to me after the show and said, "Young man, may I have a picture with you?" And I was like, "Absolutely, you're Paul Schaefer," you know. And he had, then his second question was, "Do you have a product that I can push on the Letterman show?"
Hmm.
And I went, "No,
oh,
I don't have anything,"
oh,
which I didn't. And he says, "Well, it's too bad because I would love to push you." He says, "Jackie Wilson is one of my favorite." And he says, "You are a clone."
Hmm.
You know, he says, "You are just a clone." Later, I get the product done with Tony. And while we were in the studio laying down the track, so radio promoters like to drop by to listen to what might be coming out. So we were doing Sweetest Feeling. When they came in, I was doing laying down scratch vocals, and they looked at Tony and said, "Oh, this is going to radio, right?" They go, "Why not?"
Hmm.
Tony goes, "Well, he's not a 20-year-old artist, but he looks like it." So it says, "It's good. Let's just go to radio." So I guess Tony thought about it, and he called me up and said, "What do you think about us sending a single to radio?" I said, "Yeah, let's see what happens."
And yeah.
It immediately went from nobody knows who Bobby Brooks Wilson is to 79, the top 200.
Oh, wow.
It went 79 the first day. Within 4 weeks, we was at 10 on Adult Contemporary and Urban AC. I got to tell you more about It's About Time.
Please.
It's About Time was a premonition for me. God was working with me. It was in 1994. I just started working for Legends in Concert. I just met Billy, and Billy said, "You got to start writing. You're not going to get rich from working as a singer. You got to start writing." And I said, "I don't know how to write." He said, "Just work on it." So I started buying books on writing and recognizing great writers and stuff like that. And songs started coming to me. And I was sleeping, and first I saw myself with a red jacket on, no shirt, pompadour, my head turned to the side. It was like a picture pose.
Huh.
Then I saw the sign say, "It's About Time," Bobby Brooks Wilson, in the bottom. And then the music came. "It's about time, you see the one cares for you." But the guy was Alan Jackson. It was his voice. So it was a country song, and it was a choir backing him up. But I heard it, and I was like, "Wow, this is good. It's about time you recognize love you so." And I was like, "This is good." And then the voice said, "Write it down." By that time, I had took the advice of Billy, my mentor, and I had a tape player in my bed. Because he said, "If it comes in the night, just sing what you hear." He said, "Get up, sing it, and then go back to sleep. Because when you go back to sleep, you won't remember it."
Yeah.
Sure enough, I woke up, heard the whole song in its entirety, every word, every lyric. I sung it the way I heard it. Put the tape player back down and went to sleep. The next day I woke up and I forgot what it was. I played it and then it came back to me. And then I picked out the chords on the guitar, sung it again, sent the tape to Billy. I sent him the tape and the lyrics because Billy owns a publishing company called Chevis Publishing.
Okay.
So I sent him the song and he called me back because I sent him a lot of songs. His normal response is, "Tell me what's wrong with the song."
Right.
This particular time he said, "Who helped you with this song?"
Oh.
Yeah. And I said, that one came in my dreams. I said, so I just wrote down what I heard. He said, "This is a perfectly written song. I don't have to do nothing. I will publish this song and shop it." And that was probably 95, 96. Ever since then, I've been saving that song to record. And I got quite a few other songs that I've written that way. But most of the ones that come like that, they come perfectly written. All I have to do is copy it.
So there wasn't much change between what you sang into the tape recorder and then, of course, you know, adding the guitar chords and whatnot, but there really wasn't much change?
Not a whole lot of change at all.
Wow.
Not a whole lot of change at all. Tony's interpretation is very close to what I heard in my dream.
Hmm.
I had another friend of mine on the East Coast do a take on it, but I didn't use it. And then when me and Tony worked on it, it came closer to what I originally thought. And I wanted to sing country music anyway. But my producer, he said, you're not a country singer. You're an R&B soul singer. You know?
Again, we're talking about It's About Time. There's so many wonderful songs on here that are not only originally Jackie Wilson songs, but several Bobby Brooks Wilson originals on here. Here's one you do have writing credits on, and there's something about it that I love. The song is I Can't Love You Anymore. And gosh, by title, this is set up to be a breakup song. But then we get to the follow-up words to I Can't Love You Anymore, pause, than I do right now. And it's like, oh, good. He just saved it. He rescued it for me. Bobby, was that the intention to have
first,
that?
First listen to that song, you would think, oh, it's a breakup song. But no, it's not. Not at all. This, my heart is so full, I can't give you no more. That song is basically about somebody that's never satisfied, to be honest. And you're going to find that in love. The original writer on that song is a guy named Bob Matter. And when he brought that song to me, I said, well, let me work on it. And then me and Tony got in the studio and we had our own twist to it. And he loved it.
Was it your intention to have that pause that, you know, leave a person hanging that I can't love you anymore? And then.
Yeah, because I wanted them to hear it.
Really cool. This one, again, it caught me by surprise and I laughed out loud. One of those laughs that when you're sitting by yourself, you laugh anyway kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful way to close this, Bobby. And I don't just do these interviews. I have a love for the music. And just like you just said about some of the folks that come up to you on these cruise ship tours, it happened with me too. I have to say, Bobby, that I am a fan of your father's, and now I am also a fan of yours after going through your CDs.
So I can't wait to get down there and see everybody and have a good time and just celebrate the music. That's what it's all about.
That's right. It's going to be a great, great night. Thank you again for your time. And again, look forward to seeing you in person real soon.
You too.
Bobby Wilson will be at Vibrato Grill and Jazz March 8th. VibratoGrillJazz.com for more there and more on Bobby at BobbyWilsonMusic.com. He'll hopefully be on KVC Arts once again in the relative near future to talk about the recent documentary, The Last Teardrop, exploring not only Bobby's story, but the story of Jackie Wilson as well. Thanks again to Bobby Wilson, and here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wild. Find many past KVC Arts programs via podcast through iTunes, NPR One, Spotify, and Google Play. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.
I can't love you anymore.